Sir, I will live with perseverance in the spirit of Taekwondo. Courtesy for fellow students. Integrity within myself. And to become a black belt leader. Welcome to the ATA Nation Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, sirs and ma'ams, instructors, students, everyone out in ATA Nation, thank you for tuning in. You may notice that the audio is a little different today. We didn't have the regular pre-intro little teaser. That's all because this is being done on the road. We've had some complications at the Hayden House with my recording area. Our basement is getting completely redone. And my recording area isn't available. And then trying to get things all ready before I headed out of town for leadership camp. And I didn't get it all done. So this recording is coming to you live or live to tape from a hotel room on my way to leadership camp. But I'm glad to be with you guys, and we have a great episode for you today. I'm not going to spend much time on the intro because I want to get right to the episode. We have a great interview with Mr. Wolf, Jim Wolf from ATA headquarters, and you may not know much about Mr. Wolf, but he is a long time ATA guy who has had about every job at ATA headquarters. And I heard him on a Zoom the other day, and he just got so many great stories from headquarters and just his perspective and especially of Eternal Grandmaster. So I wanted to interview him, and he told me some great stories and mentioned that I, you know, could cut and paste and stuff, some of the interview, but I decided to just go with it straight through. Cause I just think, what he has to say is so great. And for those of you guys who have met Mr. Wolf or know of his longtime history in the ATA, I think you'll really appreciate it. And if not, hopefully you get some neat stories and some neat histories from this. So let's get right to our interview, and then we'll be out.
Special guest interview.
ATA Nation, we are super excited to have with us today Mr. Jim Wolf, who is currently WMA, but has had about a billion jobs at ATA headquarters and has been around since the dinosaur ages of the ATA. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Great. Can you give us a little history of, first of all, just like how you got involved in the ATA, and then kind of some of the roles that you've held over the years with ATA?
Sure. I was actually going to school, ULR, and my brother was taking classes from a guy named Jim Boteen in Jacksonville, Arkansas. And as older brothers have to do, I was his Uber at that time. So, you know, the guy that was running the place started talking to me, and he goes, "Hey, you ever thought about doing martial arts?" I said, "No, I'm playing baseball. I'm doing other stuff." And so he got me involved. And I got to tell you, it was it was interesting because that happenstance meeting really changed my life forever. My father was not happy that I dropped out of school to go be in the karate business, which at that time was nothing like it is today. It wasn't the first time. He was not happy with one of my decisions. But in the end, one of my proudest moments was when we were having the master ceremony at the Verizon Arena, and my mother and father got to see the magnitude of what Grandmaster and the Lee family and the seniors had built. So it was a proud moment for a young boy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was with Boteen for quite a while. We split, and I was in the sporting goods business, and then Grandmaster actually sent a couple of people over to kind of talk to me. One of them was a guy named Blattner, and he actually helped, helped David Lee when he was looking for colleges. He kept saying, "Grandmaster would like to talk to you." I said, at that point, it was Master Lee. Because with Jim, we ended up having about eight schools. So I was a general manager for his schools. And that was back when they had camps in Little Rock and you had to do duck walks and the food was less than good, except for when Master Lamberson's father would bring the barbecue pit out and we'd all have barbecue together. It was a bonding experience. We actually bonded with snakes and spiders and everything else, but it was quite a bonding experience. But from there, along the way, Dale Craig contacted me, and Grandmaster had me come over, and he's still there.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Everything disappeared off my screen. Sorry.
Oh no, and, you're all good, sir.
All right. So anyhow, so I started working at headquarters in April of '88. Grandmaster, you know, talked to me. Then he asked to have a meeting with me and my wife. And my wife fell in love with him, as everybody does when they meet Grandmaster. And it was just, as I say, my buddies call me Jimmy. And in the martial arts, we're blessed to have people call us Mr. And he really helped me develop from Jimmy to Mr. Wolf over the years, sometimes with a little clunk on the head, but a little coaching, but it's all out of love. So
yes, sir.
Along the way, I started because I was running the school up in the front that they had for a long time. And then along the way, he moved me in because of the role I had with Botine. We went and worked with school owners and different things in our schools. So he put me in licensing, and I didn't really know what I was doing, but, you know, he said, you'll figure it out, kind of. And then then I did we started ProTech, and so I kind of got ProTech. We got frustrated with the tournaments at some point, so then I was the tournament chairman. Some of those things, I had titles in each area at the same time. I was smart enough to go find people that actually knew what they were doing, but it was so all that was good. Along the way, I became the chief operating officer, which I'm not sure he even knew what that was, but he would laugh and say, you're the CO something, you know, go fix it. So, and then when Grandmaster Inho was performing other duties and traveling as the organization needed, with Grandmaster Suno and him and the brothers, after Grandmaster passed, they asked me to do the CEO role, and I kind of laughed. I said, look, I don't have the training to do that. And really the way it was set up with Grandmaster, the Master's Council, Master Clark, and the Master Allemeyer and the group, it really was more like it's a really nice title. And Mrs. Lee is amazing to work for, but really I was more like a general manager. I got along good with people. So, you know, in a family business, sometimes you need people that, you know, can help talk. So as everybody's got a passion for where they think the organization's going. So I was blessed in that role.
Well, yeah, I think for many listening to this, you know, we've got a lot of younger listeners, and they probably don't know you at all. And so many of our high ranks, you know, have known you as part of the organization. You know, you're the guy at headquarters that we've known for years and years and years, kind of a jack of all trades. And now you're out at WMA doing some awesome things there. You had a lot of time with Eternal Grandmaster working at headquarters. And I know you have a billion great stories. But one of the reasons I wanted to get you on was you were on a talk recently for some licensees and mentioned a story or two. And I know you've got so many good ones that I thought we'd have you on to maybe, you know, tell a story or two that you have about Eternal Grandmaster.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, I'll sit here as long as you want and the stories won't run out. It's just important starting that Grandmaster was like a father, and every child wanted to be, whether it's a woman or a man, wanted to be his favorite child. And somehow he made us all feel like that. And he just kind of made it magical to work. And people like Master Allemeyer, Grandmaster Alamar, Grandmaster Clark, Grandmaster Sun Ho were really instrumental in everything before I was ever a part of it. So, you know, I imagine they have some amazing stories, but they were also instrumental in helping me in my role and working with this. And Mrs. Lee, honestly, it's been interesting to watch from Grandmaster's perspective. This, and this is a story about Grandmaster, is he never wanted to talk about business. He never talked about money. He just wanted to talk about people. And, you know, if we hadn't started bringing in real business people, I don't know what we would have done. So the mixture of those two coming together is always kind of fun. But today it's very exciting. I was just telling Chief Master Stauffer that I said, sir, you know, what's so good is Grandmaster, if you read the scrolls of Song Om, talked about each new generation, you know, adding to and making it more and not less. And I said, he's got to be smiling to see all the things that we overcame, number one, to the passing of him, but number two, getting through COVID and watching the energy between the young instructors. I mean, it's, you know, kind of like America sometimes. You know, when sometimes people don't like each other for whatever reason, but somebody attacks America and all of a sudden everybody's ready to fight. Stand together. ATA people, martial artists in general, are just amazing people. But they, when I saw the communications, and I'm not a big Facebook guy, but it was just so exciting to watch how they shared information and they truly cared about each other being successful. And you know, I know he was smiling watching that. So
it
was exciting. So, you know, the stories the other day, really, Master Coffer and his wife were really great people. And they kind of caught me off guard when they brought up Grandmaster. In fact, Mr. Morton said, Mr. Wolf, next time, why don't you take a breath when you're talking? But I got so excited because, you know, it's just like, you know, somebody wants to talk about your father. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to share that with everybody. But I want to make sure everybody knows I loved him. He loved me. But I thought I was a special child, but he thought everyone was a special son or daughter. So this is just my version of what I've witnessed as I was with him. But you know, one of the stories we talked about the other day was the candle. Now, I know for a lot of people that doesn't mean anything, but for a master, you know, it represents a lifetime commitment of sacrifice and sleepless nights and your partner in life kind of questioning, why would you get in the martial arts business? You know, you get on the other side of it together. So I'm asked to be a patient advocate, which I have no clue what that means. And Dr. Michael Ackerman is talking to me about what's going on, and a lady named Denise Ashbaugh. And so I get invited, and the first time I go to the doctor's visit, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to become a medical doctor, I guess, because I don't know what we're going to do. And he's sitting there, and I said, hey, sir, and I had not seen him in a little bit. He goes, sit down, I got something for you. So he pulls out a napkin, and he starts drawing on it. And I'm like, sir, what is that? He goes, pretty much telling me to shut up, but you know, just wait. So he draws the candle. I don't know how many of the masters or people have seen the candles, but the candle had an instructor's name at that time. It had a dragon, and he wanted to make sure that I did everything I could to make sure that candle would burn through the ceremony as necessary, but when they were finished with the ceremony, they could put it in a box so they'd have something for the rest of their lives to celebrate their accomplishment. And I said, well, sir, this, you know, I understand, but, you know, is there other stuff we need to talk to? He goes, he basically just told me, he goes, look, my time's short, and but this will go forever. And everybody that sacrifices their life to become a master or senior master or chief master or grandmaster, they need to know how special that is and how much we care about him. So even in his illness, he was thinking about the organization. And honestly, that story just carries over to pretty much everything I witnessed working for him for an amazing. I went to work for him in 88 and until he passed in 2000, October 5th, 2000. And it was really interesting to see the evolution, because everybody thought, you know, we had this grand plan to have a billing company and have a martial arts supply company. And those things only existed because the instructors were having problems getting anybody to help them. So it was really his travel to region or around the world to see people was it just incredible, because it wasn't based upon a volume of business anybody did. He would go see people. We weren't even sure who they were. but he goes, yeah, I got to go help him. And then he'd come back, and his favorite thing to say was, you got to fix him. So that was the direction. Go fix him. You know, but it really just meant go help him, you know. So it was a blessing, no doubt. But that story kind of exemplifies his thoughts about the longevity of the ATA and the legacy of the ATA, and how these masters and all these instructors, you know, basically he was leaving his life's work to all these people, and he wanted to know how much he loved them and appreciated it.
So, wow. It's amazing to hear, you know, as he's going through, you know, cancer treatments, all these things, that's where his mind was. You've been, you know, around, headquarters as we've had, you know, changes, you know, you've been through, you know, all of the presiding grandmasters, that feeling, that service, that Eternal Grandmaster had, you know, we've had people, you know, say, hey, you know, that's not the way we are in the ATA anymore or whatnot. You know, and you mentioned COVID, you know, seeing that and how proud Eternal Grandmaster would be. Do you, through the years, have you seen, you know, that that heart of Eternal Grandmaster continue? Is it, you know, are we doing a good job of continuing his legacy?
Look, are we doing it like he would do it? I can only imagine with social media how he would connect with people. I mean, I've heard stories from instructors overseas that said, Grandmaster called me at midnight, or he called me at something in the morning. But when he was doing it, we were a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. It was easier to stay in touch with everybody. And as it started evolving, you know, without, you know, we used to have regional directors, regional vice presidents that volunteered their time to try to help people, both their juniors and the people in the region. And he stayed in contact with them all the time. So I think it was a smaller network. You know, if you have a family and you have, you know, 100 people or 200 people, 300 people, that's one thing. When you've got 100,000, you've got, you know, schools around the world, it's hard to have the same connection. And now we're talking about, you know, he passed in 20, we're talking about 22 years ago. Some of these guys that are second, third, and fourth degree black belts, they never saw any of that. But I would say, you know, Grandmaster Sunho had the toughest role in replacing Grandmaster and coming into that time. Now, this is a guy that loaded his family up and moved to Little Rock immediately, no questions, to take care of the organization and what they'd spent their life building. So, and he has, if you've been around Grandmaster Sunho very much, he is, he's got such a great heart and such a great mannerism and way about him. So I would say, yes, it's still out there, but I think with the information age, social media and everything else, all you hear is hate and everything. Now you got school owners that, you know, they're going home and, you know, they survived COVID, and the instructors that survived COVID, sir, you know, I know whenever they get to heaven or wherever they're going and they see Grandmaster, he's going to thank them and hug them for fighting and battling to keep it going. But he'll be more upset about any of those that didn't make it, because he truly believed that martial arts had magic. It had the things that you will always use in your life: respect, courtesy, discipline, perseverance, And his saying of today not possible, tomorrow possible, he lived it. I mean, we hired a chief financial officer. First time we had one. I don't even know why we did. We didn't have that much money. But she came into the meeting and he started talking about all the things he wanted us to do. And we were like listening, and she pipes up and she goes, "Sir, you don't have the money for that." He goes, "Okay, you don't get to come to any more of my meetings, Lee." So, because he never came here for the money. He had nothing when he got here. So, but he believed maybe today we can't do it, but it's so important to do. I'm going to find the people and we're going to make it happen. And, you know, he connected with, you know, President Clinton when he was governor. He had an advisory council, which a lot of people probably won't remember, but he had somebody that knew something about computers, Tim O'Brien, who was instrumental in starting the H.U. Lee Foundation, a professor that was trying to help us get the curriculum laid out. I mean, he attracted Pascal Mabi, who was a great friend and helped do some things that helped build the organization. It was just, he attracted people. I mean, at one time we had on the board, we had Secretary of State, who was also a mayor, a different mayor, person in construction, all people that he met that just fell in love with him. You know, Linus Raines was a general manager of the Peabody. She's been such a great friend and asset to Mrs. Lee and the company, but they all became infatuated with his vision and his dream. And it was so contagious that people would just go, "Hey, Mr. Wolf, tell me whatever we can do to help," because it, you know, his vision was helping children and helping adults be better people. You know, so it was, you've met people like that, and it is when you get around somebody and you know there's nothing fake about them, and their only drive is to help people. It's exciting. So I know I took the long way around the barn on that, but I'm telling you that it's a different world, and it's tough. But I would say that fundamentally, yes, that heartbeat is still there. You know, we used to laugh and say, well, there was now, the Founders Council, I think at the time had 8, and, it was, we were saying, how could 8 not connect like one guy could? It's just so much of that. But, you know, he counted on those people to take care of areas. People like, I'll tell you this story, whether you want to use it or not, I don't know. But I got a call from him at night. It was the first whisper of anything was going on with the cancer. And he didn't even tell me what it was. He just called me, and he never called me late at night unless it was like an emergency. So he called me. He goes, "Hey, Mr. Wolf, how you doing?" I was like, "I'm good, sir." And he was kind of hemming around, which is not his way. He goes, "If I'm not here, do you think the ATA will be okay?" I said, "Well, you going on vacation? I mean, I'm not sure what you're asking." I said, "You know, where are you at?" He goes, "I'll be back in a couple of days, and, you know, we can sit and talk." And still at that time, he didn't tell me what was going on. But he had been up with Dr. Ackerman and found out he had cancer and how it was really just probably at that time too far gone. I don't know. But I think he knew. Dr. Ackerman, if you've ever spent any time with him, is just like Master Jagger and all Grandmaster Jagger and all the people up in that area. Okoboji, that camp up there, was one of his favorite places. And all I can tell you about it is he wouldn't sleep good up there. But if you happen to say, "Sir, I'm not tired," you would be up in the cold working out. he thought that's what people did when they got somewhere and were bored, was they worked out. So, he loved everyone, but he truly loved Master Jagger. Grandmaster Jagger, I apologize. I don't add those titles like I should. But because he had the heart. Mm-hmm. of Grandmaster. He just loves everybody, everything. And those were all clubs back then. Interestingly, you know, people talk about, well, I don't have a big school, or I don't have this, or the ATA doesn't care about me. Understand that some of the best leaders in the organization came from clubs. Dr. Ackerman had a club. And I'm glad we're doing this, because if you can get this on there, I was honored and asked by Master Jagger to introduce, say some words about Dr. Ackerman when he received his mastership. And I mean, everybody knows my daughter passed. And the first time I'd been in the state house, in that foyer where we do all the ceremonies, and he gave me this list of things, and I was looking at it. This guy is one of the top doctors in the world. And he thinks that what we do in ATA is so important, he makes time for it. Mm-hmm. He just didn't make time for it. He was passionate and did so much about it. So I owe him a big apology. He said I did fine. But, you know, he just is a reminder of how amazing people, and you probably have them in your school, and most instructors have them in their schools. Parents are people that do so much to help with a tournament, a testing, answer the phone, and they just, they just love it.
I thought you did an amazing job there. I actually was getting senior master that year that Dr. Acker went through his mastership thing. And I had not heard the story. I had not, really known of Dr. Acker. And I need to contact him and get him on the show, because that was an awesome thing.
I'm going to tell you, he is so humble. So as I'm reading this sheet, Master Jagger gives me grief, because he goes, I didn't mean for you to read every line. I said, sir, the more I read it, I was like, how does this guy? I mean, and you saw Dr. Ackerman crying, mm-hmm. because he got mad. That's how much he loved the ATA, loved Grandmaster, and loved the organization. Being recognized around the world as one of the top doctors, but getting this was, I think it was a season in his life that he just will always cherish. And he had the biggest club we had in the organization for a long time. But he is definitely a jewel.
We're
blessed to have him.
When Grandmaster called you and asked about if you thought the organization would, how it would do, what did you say? What was your answer?
I told you what I said. What, you going on vacation?
Well, yeah,
look, Grandmaster always seemed bulletproof and invisible. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't matter. He truly lived the day not possible, tomorrow possible. We never thought about him passing. Uh-huh. We figured he'd be burying all of us. So it was a little odd, but I never considered it was anything like it turned out to be. Uh-huh. So, you know, once he started talking to me after a lot of tears and talk and him hugging me and me crying more and him hugging me, when we had to talk about the reality of where he was going, and, you know, we're blessed. If he wasn't in headquarters every day, he called. He wanted to know what was happening. So once we got to the details of it, it was extremely painful. Actually, I went from about, 200 pounds to 300 pounds in a year, because I battled the thought of him not being there. Mm-hmm. And actually, Dr. Ackerman was kind enough to let me fly up there, because I got this terrible cough. And I think it was more mental than anything, that just this is the one thing in my life I can always count on, a person that changed my life and changed, you know, millions of lives. And if something could happen to him, what about the rest of us? So it was an interesting, I'm sorry if I went off on that, but it's just a passion that he had for so many people that is magical.
Well, it's been 22 years later, and you are still, working hard there at ATA headquarters. What keeps you what keeps you motivated? What keeps you around and, you know, doing the work of serving all the licensees out there?
Well, first of all, I always tease and I say, they say, Mr. Wolf, how come you've been there so long? I said, well, number one, I knew if my last name wasn't Lee, I was temporary. every day I went to work and I never took it for granted. The other thing was there was so many great things going on. You know, about the time I got there is when we started Karate for Kids. Then we had Protect. All the programs started to evolve. I mean, it was just a kind of a magical evolution in the organization. You know, nobody liked Karate for Kids at the time. Actually, I told Grandmaster, I said, sir, I don't know if I'm a very good salesman or not. I've talked to a couple of people, and they don't think much of it. So he actually said, you're going with me. And we went and did like little dog and pony shows and to tell the people, look, and anybody that knows him, he would never put a program out there for him to make a dollar and the instructors not to make $10. So, but I think with him standing there and they trusted him so much that they took a chance. And we set the program up back then where, you know, if it didn't work for you, you got your money back. And we didn't hardly charge anything anyhow. We, you know, we did need something because we could barely keep the lights on back then. But it was really watching those kind of things. People like, you know, Grandmaster Chuck Norris. My daughter answered the phone during the summer. And, you know, he's wanting to see Grandmaster. And, you know, he doesn't want to see him. So then they call me and they go, hey, you know, we want to see Grandmaster. I said, sir, respectfully, I don't think he wants anybody to see him right now. He wants to remember you as he was. He wants you to remember him as he was. If you've been in the museum, there's a letter from Grandmaster Norris, the Grandmaster. Mm-hmm. And it talks about, you know, their time together and how they both, you know, I forget one of the phrases at the end, but hopefully we can both stand together one day and look down and say we did good. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, sir.
And he also, I got, like I said, I got to meet interesting people. This is a funny story. You're going to have to cut some of this out, I'm sure. But every year when we did the World Championships, the governor would, you know, proclaim it ATA Day, and Grandmaster would go up there and talk. And when then Governor Clinton was in office, they became really close. They, from the standpoint of he loved what Grandmaster was doing, not only for the people in the world, but also for the city of Little Rock and the state, because our convention was the biggest one minus Walmart. And so we're up there and we're waiting, and Grandmaster and Governor Clinton go to talk. And the next thing I know, I got a member of Governor Clinton's staff saying, Grandmaster wants to see you. I said, well, where are they at? They go, over in that room. Well, that room was like a closet. It was, I don't know if it was 4x4x4, whatever. It wasn't very big. So you've got Governor Clinton standing here and Grandmaster standing here. And as soon as I walk in, the governor says, Jim, you need to tell him I'm not breaking a board with my foot. And Grandmaster's giving him grief saying, you know, come on, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. And the governor's going, no, that's not happening. This notice out, and all these press people were sitting there waiting to see the governor because he had broken with his hand before with a knife and strike. But not mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, you know, it was just comical because they didn't want to offend each other. So I'm standing here and believe we're all touching almost. And the governor's saying, just tell him. And the grandmaster's saying, oh, I'll tell him it's fine. I'm like, It was magical. By the way, he didn't do the kick. He did the strike, but he was an amazing advocate for the organization when he was here. And then he becomes president. You know, everybody's got opinions on that. But I can tell you, as far as the organization goes, he was a great friend. And other things like that, sir, that things that there's no way a young boy from Arkansas is going to get an opportunity to see and meet these people. So it was exciting. There was always something new. I was addicted to helping people. My mother was extremely gifted at that. We had nothing, but she thought, you know, half of nothing for somebody else was a lot. So Grandmaster always just, his whole deal was to help people. And so you always felt good about what you were doing. And then you get to meet people and go along the way, you know, watching him with Grandmaster Olimar. You know, I always tease. I think he Grandmaster Olimar, Grandmaster Suno, and Grandmaster Clark were like the elite people with him. Mm. You know, it's interesting. But he saw, as a leader, you know, you want to try to get people in the right position. And he had a skill. He realized everyone's strength and a skill set. Mine was communicating and, you know, trying to get people to talk. You know, Master Olimar, I don't know how many schools Grandmaster Olimar went to and helped build the school, putting up paneling or doing whatever. He would go anywhere, anytime. And when you listen to their conversations, you're talking about pure love. Mm-hmm. And Grandmaster Clark was the same thing, but Grandmaster Clark was kind of like the guy always bringing the programs. And it was kind of funny because sometimes they were ahead of their time. So they each had their place. And Grandmaster Suno, people should remember, if you're worried about showing respect to your senior, his brother's the Grandmaster. Grandmaster Suno is second in command of this organization. He would run to get the door for his brother. He would carry his brother's suitcase. He was such a living example of a junior. And I don't know. Those guys did so many things that were the true support of building foundation. And then people out in the organization that I got to meet were just, I mean, they're just amazing people. So, you know, whether it was the West Coast or wherever, the seniors were just, and they were so passionate about the ATA. Now, you listen to people talk to about the ATA, sir, they think it's theirs. You know, they talk about it like, you know, they own it. And yes, they're sir. Passionate about what it represents. You try to change something. When Grandmaster, you know, introduced the song on forms, you know, and I don't think any of them particularly cared about it. But over time, they all absorbed it. So it is, anyhow, we've been blessed with a lot of amazing people.
Yes, so, sir.
In watching him deal with them all indifferently, he knew, like, you know, with your children, which ones to kind of get on to, which ones to hug, which ones to give a little direction to. But it is, it's fun to watch. And now with Grandmaster MK, you were talking about the heart. We call him the Mother Teresa of the ATA.
That is a great analogy.
He loves, he truly loves everybody. And he is, his compassion for anybody that sits and talks to him. I watched him at when we did the Fall Nationals last year. Yeah. And he was going through his training with Grandmaster Suno and the group. And I watched him with people. He never, in fact, none of the brothers that served in that role ever acted like it was an inconvenience to talk with people or to take a picture or anything, like they didn't have time for it. Uh-huh. Their capacity, I don't think they ever appreciated their celebrity and how magical the Lee family is, has been. So it is... He is going to be a great heartbeat for this organization for a while.
Yes, sir. Yeah, for sure. And I want to thank you first for your time today, but more importantly for you know, being there. You know, obviously, you know, it's been 22 years since Eternal Grandmaster passed away, but it's people like you at headquarters who are continuing to help us all keep that spirit alive, keep that the heart of the ATA, you know, and especially as we move from, you know, kind of the founding generation to the next generation, you know, your service has been invaluable to us. So I really want to thank you for that.
I appreciate that, sir. Let me just add one more thing.
Certainly.
The evolution of the organization and the people that have taken over, you know, whether it's Master Stevens in tournaments or, you know, Master Skiles now with training, you know, each generation is making it better. But the decision by Mrs. Lee to focus on the business part, she knew she didn't, you know, the martial arts was Grandmaster Suno on that deal, but to try to bring in people. And we've had some really great people come through. You know, Master Spencer came through. Each one made something better about the organization. And Mr. Morton coming in, you know, when he interviewed me for when he first got here, and he said something about WMA, I said, sir, I'm only over there because I get along with everybody. I understand the martial arts business, and I'm learning. I said, I probably got a kindergarten education in martial arts supplies, but I have a master's in the martial arts business. And he had the knowledge of the products and stuff. You know, his passion is just another person that came in and made things better. You know, it's been kind of exciting to watch. As you get older, you want to make sure one day when you're not here, you're looking down and you're going, man, look at what it was, and now look at what it is. And it's exciting. So, you know, to all the people that have helped make it possible, plus the young people that are critical to this organization, he understood social media, and he was willing to go region to region and listen to people complain, which is not that much fun.
No, certainly not.
But he never came back one time complaining about them. It's like, there's things we got to fix. We got to make things better. So having the martial arts side, which was the way Grandmaster originally wanted it set up, is you'd have a business council, you'd have the master's council, and they worked together under a board. It was, it's been fun to see it evolve. Now, was there a little pushing and shoving here or there? Yeah, but everybody's trying to get their feet on the ground. But I truly believe everybody we have is trying to take care of the school owners, take care of the club owners, and the students especially, that they feel that they're a part of something that will change their lives, and we appreciate them being a part of it.
Yes, sir. Well, we appreciate you being a part of it, sir. We'll have to get you back on another time for more stories, because I could sit and listen to them forever. Hey, you know, we probably shouldn't keep the people all day long. But I appreciate your time.
Good luck to you cutting some of that down. You know, Neil started laughing. He goes, I'm not worried about you talking. I'm just worried about when you're going to stop talking. Especially about Grandmaster.
Yes, sir. Well, right. No
thanks,
worries.
Thanks for all you're doing, sir.
Thank you. You know,
all these things that have popped up, the podcast, the ATA Forward. I mean, again, those are things that really, really at the right time, really kind of connected all of our folks. So I know you got other things to do with your life, but thank you for making that happen.
Sure. Hey, we're happy, happy to continue, you know, spreading the today not possible, tomorrow possible dream of Grandmasters.
Bingo. That's great.
Well, ATA Nation, we wanted to wrap this up real quick. I know we went a little long. Mr. Wolf has a lot of stories, a lot of information, and loves to share it. And so we're gonna wrap this episode here. I've got a lot to talk to you guys about with Nationals and Leadership Camp, and just some great interviews coming up. But you know, it's really late where I am right now, and I got to get on the road again in the morning. And so I hope you, ATA Nation, are out there taking action.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the ATA Nation podcast. Be sure to subscribe and share with your ATA family.
And guys, it's kind of a miracle this episode got made at all, but I missed one last week because of our recording issues in the basement, and I just didn't want to leave you guys hanging again. So let me know what you thought of the episode. DM me on the Instagrams, ATA Nation Podcast. Talk to you soon.